A few weeks ago, Andy and I and a few others maybe here were able to be down in Florida. They had the lectures in the gymnasium. There were some 1,300 to 1,400 people there singing. It's one of the great joys of my life to be able to sit into a place like that, especially it sounds like a great big shower there in that gymnasium. It just echoes. Amazing acoustics when you have that many people sitting there singing songs. You hear all those various voices, the various parts of the song being sung, and it just sends chills down your back. Let me tell you something. When I was just standing there singing that song with you, and to realize how many various beautiful voices we have in this congregation, and that song seems to bring those voices out. And I want you to know that is just as beautiful to me here as anything I heard down there. For you are the most special people in my life. And to know that we're singing these songs of praise to Jehovah together, both now and in the life that is to come. I want to sing that same song to you, with you in just a few short days or months or years from now. I hope that we can sing praises to Jehovah together. That's our purpose for being here tonight, to encourage you to that. In fact, as Andy's already pointed out in the song, Farther Along, we'll know all about it. Farther along we will, and here's my key, we will understand why. I don't understand a lot of things happening right now. Dale mentioned in his prayer a few moments ago about all the tumult and the chaos that's around our world right now, especially over the Middle East. People brutalizing one another, killing one another. Not only just with guns, but with cannons and with knives and with gas and with all kinds of things. The most brutal ways that one human can kill another. And that seems to be running rampant in our world today. Wars are running all over the world. Many that we don't even hear about on the news in various tribal countries of Africa and places like that. And I don't understand it. And I know that you don't either. But even in our own world, we go through desperate times and we go through hard times. And I want you to think with me for a little bit tonight about, and this will be taken a few moments from now from Deuteronomy chapter 8, but I want you to turn to Romans chapter 8. We're going to also look at Deuteronomy 8, and I want to ask some questions. But I also want to make a statement and make a comment. When I think about farther along, I will understand why. I'll understand why various things happen in this old broken down world. I don't understand them right now. But I do want you to know that in my nearly 47 years of being a Christian, next month I will have been a Christian for 47 years. And I suppose of all the lessons that I have learned or tried to learn or tried to understand in my nearly half a century of being a child of God, it is trying to learn and trying to grasp and trying to implement in my life the very fact that this world is not my home. That's a hard lesson for me to learn, because I wake up in this world. I smell, I see, I hear, I speak, I use my five senses, and they're all attuned to the ways of this world. And it's my desire to want to satisfy that smell, that touch, that sight, that hearing, with all the sensual or all the senses of the world around me. And I want to be a part of this world, and I want to enjoy this world. But I must be reminded, and sometimes God's going to make me know. Sometimes in a hard lesson to be learned. Rick, this world is not your home. Learn it, and learn it well. That's a hard lesson to learn. So let's spend just a moment talking about that. Maybe you've had just as hard a time as I have learning that lesson. In Romans 8, beginning in verse 18, please. Paul said, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. He's speaking of a now and a then, a here and a hereafter. He's speaking of present tense and future tense. He said the sufferings of this present time. The whole Roman chapter 8 is talking about that concept of suffering as a Christian, suffering in this life, and trying to understand why. And he's saying, farther along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, we will understand why. Look at the very next verse. For the earnest expectation. You know what hope is, as he's going to talk about in verse 24? Hope is simply desire plus expectation. Something I want and I expect to get. So he says, my earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. I wish I really understood that very well. For, he says in verse 20, the creation was subjected to futility. He's talking about the earth, friend. Brothers and sisters, he's talking about the world in which we live. It was subjected to futility. Futile means you kind of shrug your shoulders and hold up your hands and say, man, that was worthless. That was useless. The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly. It didn't want it willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. He set the stage here for what verse 22 is going to say, but what he's basically telling us is this world has been subjected to something. Adam and Eve started something they could not put back in Pandora's box. They opened a box they couldn't shut. They started something that led to the breaking down of the world in which we live. Then he says in verse 22, for we know, here's my key thought, we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Mothers understand that's better than any of us men. When it talks about, and I think that's a good word, when a mother goes into labor. Great word, isn't it, moms? It is labor. It's hard work. It's not pleasant. This is by the sweat of your brow. We know that the whole creation, this world, groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. From the days of Adam and Eve until now. In other words, something's happening. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves, we Christians, groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. Something better is coming. For we were saved in this hope. What hope? There's something going to be revealed. But hope that is seen is not hope, for why does he yet still hope for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we eagerly wait for it with perseverance. We tie a knot at the end of the rope and we hang on for dear life. We persevere. We endure. What are we enduring? We're enduring this life. This world. It's an endurance. It's hard. When you endure something, you're going through some tough times and you're just trying to hang on. You're just trying to persevere. Get through it. Hang on to your faith. But stop and think with me for a second. How do we know when he says, we know the earth groans and labors now? How do we know that? Well, obviously, we can see the Bible tells us so. From paradise, going back in the Garden of Eden in Genesis, chapters 1 and 2. Beautiful. Everything is wonderful. It's a bed of roses, almost in a literal sense. But then after the fall, there was a horrible, horrible curse. And from that moment on, when Adam and Eve were removed from the garden, he put a cherubim with a flaming sword to not let them back in, lest they eat and live forever, which God did not want them to do because if they had, it would have been a miserable existence forever and ever. What if they, in their dying state and their broken state, had to lay on earth for the rest of their lives? Can you imagine Adam and Eve now still standing here with a decayed body? Can you imagine how horrible an existence that would be? I sure don't want to live to be 950 years old like he did. not when I'm breaking down. I'm 58. Again, like I tell you, I exercise and I sound like a bowl of Rice Krispies. I don't want to do the snap, crackle, pop thing for the rest of my life. So how do we know? We know because the Bible tells us so in Genesis 3, but we also know from what Moses told us in Psalm 90, the only psalm we know that he wrote. I love this psalm because it tells me some things I'm trying to understand now. When he says, "For all of our days are passed away in your wrath, we finish our years like a sigh." Charlie Brown had it, didn't he? Think about finishing your years like a sigh. What do you do? You're just tired. You're worn out. 70 years, maybe? Perchance 80 years? Even to 80 years. Moses may be even writing this when he's 120, saying, "Yet by reason of strength, they might be that long. Yet their boast is only labor and sorrow." There's that word again. "For it is soon cut off." The incision takes place. The umbilical cord, as it were, is cut from this world. And we fly away. Moses was telling me what life is like in this world. I'm thinking about the idea of my dad right now. He's 85. He's suffering horribly from a thing called shingles. He's been suffering for over 4 months now, and it's getting worse by the day, he said. It's a horrible, painful thing. And I'm sure there's some days he just wants to die. And I think about finishing your years after 80, 85 years, and just like a sigh. But you know, when I think about, even if we had long life, and even if we had that, life's teacher, life is going to teach us. And I want to know what degree you possess and you hold right now. What have you earned in this old world? Most of you will have some type of degree or are about to get a degree. Some of you are still in kindergarten. But life has its teacher. We'll call it Life 101 in your class, if you would. I don't know about you, but I am closely getting ready. I've already got my bachelor's. I'm getting close to my master's degree in the University of Hard Knocks. I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way. Trial and error. Do this. I found out that didn't work too good. If I'd only listened to God, if I'd only listened to my parents, if I'd only listened to wiser people, I could have avoided a lot of problems in this old world. And so I get all my bumps and my bruises, and I learn a lot about life going through it the hard way. Even when I do it right, there's still going to be the hard knocks of life. If we all do everything perfectly, ask Joseph, ask David, ask others who've gone before us, hard knocks come your way even when you do everything just right. And yet I'm telling you, there's also a graduate school, a postgraduate school that we need to go to. And it's found, it's not just the UHK, it's UKH. It's the universal, or the university, however you want to put that, of the kingdom of heaven. When I go and listen to the teacher, there's only one teacher in this school. And when I listen to him, "Rabbi, teacher, tell me, what are the lessons I need to learn about life?" And I sit and I listen to him. And he tells me all about what it is to be in the kingdom of heaven and the blessings that come when he says, "Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these other things will be added unto you." In this world of the University of Hard Knocks, we seek the things of this world, and we do not get satisfaction. But in the kingdom of heaven, there's ultimately peace. "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. They are the ones who inherit the earth and are filled." So when I think about what I'm learning as I go through this life, Professor Jesus, I ask him, is there any lesson? What can I learn? Especially when I look at life and I see and ask the question, why is life so hard? I love to ask Jesus that question, and yet I can. He allows me into his postgraduate school, and I'm allowed to ask such questions. Any question I like. And I ask the Lord, "Lord, why is it so hard? Do I have to understand it only by and by, or can I understand some of it now?" And the Lord would say, "You can understand some of it now. I'll answer some of that for you right now." Why is life so hard? Deuteronomy chapter 8 begins to give us an illustration of that. Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses is, of course, after leading him through the 40 years of the wilderness wandering, they're coming toward the end of that now, and Moses has some instruction. He's going to sit down and give them some illustrations and examples and teachings about what they have just learned in their 40 years of wandering. And he said in verse 2, "And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble you and to test you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep His commandments or not." What was the 40 years of wilderness wandering about? Was that just senseless, wasted time? And the answer to that is a resounding no. God was doing something here. It seemed useless when they were just wandering around and around and around. What are we doing here? We're just all kind of building a great big cemetery here. All of these bodies are being buried in this wilderness out here. What are we accomplishing? And the Lord said, "You're accomplishing my will. You're learning what I'm trying to teach. And that is, I'm trying to teach you to humble you, to test you, and to know what is in your heart." It's what He wants to know. I want to know what's in your heart. Because the next generation is coming along and I've got to teach them that lesson before they get into the promised land. I will not give them the rest. I will not give them the land flowing with milk and honey. I will not give them the promised land until I know what's in your heart. The second generation coming up behind them is the real purpose behind why they're wandering. Yes, that former generation is all going to die. But the Lord is teaching the next generation so that they can be prepared when they enter into the promised land. Think about yourself, what that's saying. Especially you parents teaching your children. So verse 3 then says, "So He humbled you, allowed you to hunger in that pain and that sorrow and that suffering, and fed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that He might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord." I love that statement. When I was reading that this week, that's why I did the sermon, it just really hit me what He's trying to say to me here. That He might make you know. What's He doing out here in the wilderness for these 40 years? He's trying to make them know. The hard way, because they wouldn't learn it the easy way. The breakdown at Kadesh Barnea, when He finally sent them back, He says, "I'm going to make you know, and it takes 40 years, I will instruct you." So this wilderness classroom for 40 years is saying, "I am going to force feed you. I'm going to make you to know man will not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." When I speak, there's where life's lessons are learned. So God will make us know. I just thought about that, and I want to talk to you just for a few minutes tonight about that. What is He going to make us know, you and me? When we read our Bibles, we read the stories of Israel in the wilderness and finally into the promised land. What have we learned? And as we continue to make the type and the anti-type connection between what they went through and now what we go through when we enter our promised land, what's God going to do, and how long is it going to take? Mine's 47 years. How long's yours? To make me know something. He's trying to teach them, He's going to teach us, this wilderness is not the promised land. This wilderness is not the promised land. They understood that. The manna on a daily basis, then the quail, then the water from the rocks, and those various things. They learned that they got by, they got sustenance, they had food, clothing, and shelter in one regard. But they realized and they knew also well that this wilderness wandering was not the promised land. They knew where it was, but they couldn't get there until the next generation. So I want to say that about us. When I think about what God will make me know, oh, if I could only learn that now instead of learning it through the University of Hard Knocks. If this wilderness that I live in, that this earth, He makes me to know, Romans 8 verse 18, He makes me to know that this earth that groans and labors until now, can you hear, if you sit real quiet, can you hear the earth creak? squeak, crack, rumble, break? I can. I see it around me. I feel it in my own bones. I see it in you sometimes. This world is broken. This is the wilderness. This is not the promised land. This is not my home. In Hebrews chapter 4, look if you would to that wonderful text. I don't have time to read all of it. I wished I could. Mark it in your Bible and read it for yourself. He starts in verse 1, in chapter 3, verses 16 through 19, he kind of gives you the background to it. Too bad there's a chapter break there. When he's talking about what's happening with this rest, and they couldn't enter because of unbelief, talking about the people of Israel. And he says, therefore, in other words, now lesson learned. Learn from what Israel did not learn. Since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of us seem to come short of it. And he goes on and starts talking about this rest. Skip down to verse 8 if you would. For if Joshua had given them rest, well, didn't Joshua get him into the promised land? What's the answer? Didn't Joshua get him into the promised land? Yeah. But Joshua didn't give them rest. So what's he doing? What's he saying? What's he trying to make us understand? Nothing and no place on this earth is the rest, the ultimate rest. And he's saying, if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward, that's God, would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains, therefore, in other words, there was a type and an antitype. Even though Israel came into this land flowing with milk and honey, corn and wine, all the great things that God had promised, even though they got that, they didn't really get the rest. God spoke of another day, the day that you and I can now speak about. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. When do we get that? It's when we cease from our works. Jesus has told us still, work for the night comes when no man can work. I don't get the rest. I don't get the ultimate promised land. I don't get what I'm seeking for until I die, or until the Lord returns. Boy, if I could just drive that point home to me. This is not a time to sit and relax and rest and to go through the retirement mindset. This is a time to keep on keeping on, to keep on working. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. I could have had Andy lead this song, but you've sung it enough, you know. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. That's what a good old Southern boy would say. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. Matthew 6, verses 19 and 20. The angels beckon me. Can you hear them? Can you see them through the eye of faith? They beckon me from heaven's open door. And I can't feel at home in this world anymore. I sing it, but sometimes I just don't believe it like I ought to. How about you? God's got to make me know that. And those songs, and your singing to me, and our studying together, reminds me. I'm in the wilderness. I don't care how many goods and greatness of blessings I've got in this world, I'm still in the wilderness. And promised land is still to come. God will make me know that I'm a stranger and I'm a pilgrim. In Hebrews chapter 11, since you're there in Hebrews, just skip over a couple of verses pages in your Bible. Start in verse 13 with me. These all died in faith. He's talking about those patriarchs who've gone before. Not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, confessed them that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Don't you like that verse? All the patriarchs before us, all of our forefathers before us, even in the faith, all of us even till this moment. We live in such a way that we haven't received the ultimate promises, but we believe they're there. God, being a covenant God, never violates or breaks His covenant. And His promise to me is, your rest is coming. But for me to learn that, I've got to learn that I am a stranger and a pilgrim in this world. Do you know what that is? 1993, I took my first trip to China. And Daryl ML went with me, and he was supposed to stay with me the whole trip. He'd been there a number of times, and I got there, and the night I was there, he comes up to me, and he had a Bible study that he had met with somebody else, and he said, this guy wants me to go to teach his people down in Hangzhou, hours south of us. I'm in a strange country for the first time. This is everything, the sights, the sounds, the smells, everything was out of sync. Everything was leaving me homesick. Everything was leaving me terrified, even with Daryl there, and he says, I'm leaving. I didn't see him until the day I got on the plane to come home a month later. He left me there. I hate him still. Sink or swim, buddy, he said. Sink or swim. And for a while I thought I was drowning. But I'll tell you, over the time, even though everything was out, I wasn't at home. I never felt comfortable. Not only that, I knew I saw under every lamp, under every telephone call, I saw, you know, the KGB. And it was terrible. It was terrifying. And I knew China was not my home. And all I wanted was to get on that plane and come home. But you know, fast forward to 2007. I went back for the umpteenth time. I could get off the plane there. I felt right at, in one sense, almost right at home. It still was not home. But it was a comfort level that was there. The sights, the sounds, the smells, the food, everything, I was actually anticipating. But I think about that now in my life. When the bad things are happening, you say, I want to get out of here. But then there's sometimes that comfort level that we come to, and we begin to accept things when we live in this world long enough, and we tend to think that we could actually make this home. There are times where I thought I could actually live in China. I could live there and work there. Benita said, no. No, I'm just kidding. The idea is that we can become comfortable here. But I need to be reminded that I am still in this world a stranger and a pilgrim. Everything ought to be something to say, this is not home, Rick. I'm sure there are people in the wilderness for 40 years at the 38th, 39th, and 40th years. They were quite at home in the wilderness. As weird as that might sound, they were. It's all they knew. I don't want this world to be anything but a wilderness. I don't want to have anything but manna and quail on a regular basis, because this is not the kind of food and the drink that I want. I want something far better. Lord, make me to know that. And Lord, as I pray to you, I also pray, help me to understand that my citizenship is not here, it's there. Paul argued in Philippians chapter 3 in verses 17 and following. Philippians chapter 3, verses 17 and following. Brethren, join in following my example, and note those who walk as you have us for a pattern. For many walk of whom I told you often and now tell you even weeping, they're enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction. God is their belly, their glory is their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. Talk about Christians who've been infiltrated in the kingdom. And he says, this is what has become of them. They are at home in this world. This is their home. They're not looking beyond this world. He reminds us, though, for our citizenship is in heaven, from which we eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body, that it may be conformed to His glorious body, according to the working by which He is able to subdue all things to Himself. I'm not going to be home until He takes me there. When He takes this body and transforms it to His glorious body, and then and only then will I be at home. Lord, help me to know that my citizenship, that I'm nothing more than an illegal alien in this old world. As much as I love my country, as much as I might be a patriot or a loyalist or a nationalist or whatever you want to call it, ultimately I must understand that I would immediately in a heartbeat betray my country. If it was between the choice of America and the kingdom of heaven. there's where my loyalty lies. There's where I'm a true patriot and compatriot. I'm compassionate as a patriot in the kingdom of heaven. God, help me to know that. And God, help me also to learn one more thing. Lord, help me to look up, not look around. Colossians argues that just brilliantly in chapter 3. If then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are above. Where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God, set your mind on things above, not on the things here below. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. And Christ, when He appears, who is our life, when He appears, I will appear with Him in glory. I am not going to be at home until I understand that. I'm going to quit looking around. I'm going to always start looking up. And how am I going to do that? Real quickly, just 4 points and I'll close. How are we going to do that? How will God make us to know? Would you pray this prayer? Would you allow God, in order to help you to understand that this world is but a wilderness, the promised land is to come, the rest is to come, would you pray, as Paul would even say, Lord, remove this thorn from me, but nevertheless, if you want it to remain, then buffet me. I'll be strong when I'm weak. Lord, if that's what it takes, if it takes a thorn in the flesh, either literally or figuratively, I'll take the thorn to learn that I need you. Paul maybe was feeling I could have get buffed, but, you know, I could have been buffed up or puffed up. Not buffed up, pumping iron, I guess. But he would just, in other words, he would have become, oh man, look at me. But God gave him the thorn in the flesh to keep him humble. And he says, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Farther along, we'll understand why. Would you pray for a thorn in the flesh if that's what it took? That's a hard one to say, isn't it? If God could make us know by the loss of something precious, perhaps as Jesus argued in Matthew 5, whether it be the loss of your eye or your hand, maybe the loss of something else that might be precious to you. But as he argued in there in Matthew chapter 5 that, well, it'd be better to go through life with only one eye than to go into hell with two. Same with my feet. Same with my hands. Lord, help me to know that if the loss of something precious to me reminds me of this world not being my home, then Lord, whatever it takes, help me to do that. It might be chronic pain. I think of Job often. Ever since I taught the lesson on Job two or three years ago, think about what that was saying when he was saying, cursed be the day that they announced that a male child had been born. He longed to get out of this old world. He was in chronic, 24/7, 365 pain. He just couldn't hardly bear it much any longer. But what it did, it brought him to his knees, and it certainly made him have to ask the hard questions that ultimately, even though God never fully answered all of his questions, he ultimately grasped what God had done in one small sense. He never got the full story of that, I guess, until after he left this old world. And maybe not even now yet. But God helped me to know that even if I'm going through struggles in this old world, to remind myself I'm living in a broken world. And this whole earth is groaning and laboring until now. And finally, maybe God will make me to know through my trials and tribulations. It's an odd statement in James chapter 1, verse 2 to me. Count it all joy when you go through manifold trials. That's a strange statement. Count it all joy to go through manifold trials, knowing the testing of your faith produces patience, and let patience have its perfect work, that I might ultimately understand the faith that leads to the understanding of that this world is not my home, that indeed I'm just a passing through. Will I accept the lesson? Let me close with this thought in Hebrews chapter 12. Have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by Him. Are you? Sometimes we don't realize that maybe sometimes that is God's chastening when we've got the thorn in the flesh or the pain or the loss of something precious in our life. For when the Lord loves, whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom the Father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. God, keep me from being an illegitimate. Help me to be your child, and I'll accept your chastening. I don't always know when that is. I can't put my finger on it. I can't tell you, and I can't even tell myself often why the chastening is what it is. But Lord, help me to understand. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But He, God, for our profit, that we may be partakers of His holiness. That's all I ask. God, help me to be a partaker of Your holiness. And that doesn't really come in this world to its ultimate sense. It only comes in the next. When our bodies that are mortal be put into the ground and decay and in corruption. And 1 Corinthians 15 says they'll be raised in incorruption and in glory. Only then will I understand it all by and by. Farther along, I'll understand why. Will I accept these lessons? And I'll have all the answers to even to the questions that I've asked for you this evening. But what I want you to do is just provoke you a little bit to understand. And remind you, maybe if you need reminding, that this world is broken and God is not going to correct it. God's not going to fix it. There's not going to be peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Not in this world. God will have to destroy this world. And create a new heaven and a new earth wherein dwells righteousness. And there's home. There's the rest. Would you like to be in that kingdom? Get out of this University of Hard Knocks mentality. Come to the great teacher. Come to the kingdom of heaven. Be born again by water and spirit into the kingdom, Jesus said. And then and only then will you begin to understand why. While together we stand and while we sing.